Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Don Marsh. Understanding Ferguson post Michael Brown can be complicated. On today's program, we'll talk about one way that may be less so. We'll explain that a little bit later. After a conversation with Ferguson's police chief, Delvish Moss. He's new to the job. We sworn in May. He's taken over a department in transition, a department that was highly criticized following the shooting death of Brown by a Ferguson police officer. Chief Moss comes to his new job from Miami, where he served most recently as the government's, or the department's, I should say, public information officer. Chief Moss, thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And welcome to the St. Louis area and Ferguson.
It's been great.
You know, I have to ask, the first thing I thought of when learned about your appointment and before your swearing in May was, why would somebody want that job? 31 years in Miami. Ferguson obviously has the national spotlight, and you have to come in and work things out with the Justice Department. Why take this job?
Well, I think initially when the job even came up, I have a cousin who lives here who actually suggested that I apply for the job, and I didn't think that I'd get it. But more and more as I looked at it, I also thought about Miami 30-some-odd years ago when we also had civil unrest and when we were also the subject of a consent decree, when we had a number of things that needed to be done in order to change the direction of the department. And I said, you know, having lived in a city where riots took place and then later being a young policeman on the line where riots were taking place, I thought that maybe I offered a unique perspective to Ferguson that might be of some use.
What did you learn during that period of time that you can put to use here?
Well, I think one of the things that I learned was that you see snippets on the news and they give you sort of a snapshot of events happening, but they don't give you the real story. And I think one of the things that I realized in Miami was that our reputation was not like what we were. And I figured Ferguson probably was the same thing. I understood that in riots, the people hurt most are the people who actually live in the neighborhood, the people who can't go to the store because it's burned down, the people who can't access certain services because they're no longer there. And, you know, I thought I really hurt for the people, I thought.
Mm-hmm. What have you been hearing from the people? I know you've spent a lot of time one-on-one with the citizens of Ferguson.
Yes. Well, it's interesting because I've had a number of different forums that I've gotten a chance to talk with people. One has been some of the community meetings where people come and they express really their concern about crime, their concern about speeding, their concerns about fair treatment from the police. But I've also done a series of door-to-door knocks where I've walked wards and I've actually knocked on doors and talked to people. And you get a different sense when you come to their house. I think first they're surprised that the police chief shows up at their house, mm-hmm. but secondly, there is a little bit more openness when you're sitting in a living room and people start to tell you about some of the challenges. I think that the one thing I've learned is that everyone wants the same thing. They want good schools. They want a fair and just police department. They want to secure their economic situation. I think that the problem comes in and they're sort of different views about how you get there. Mm. But I've learned that Ferguson has a real good tight-knit sense of community with some economic differences and some differences along racial lines.
Were you well aware of Ferguson and the complexities in Ferguson before you took the job?
I was not. Yeah. As a matter of fact, other than the fact that one of my family names is Ferguson, I had never even heard of the city until the unrest took place. But I knew that, like any city in the United States, Ferguson probably had some of the same challenges that any other city in the United States have.
Yeah. Well, a lot of people hadn't heard of Ferguson, but now people all over the world have, and puts the spotlight on the town and on you and the job that you have to do. Were you caught at all by surprise by what happened the night of the anniversary of Michael Brown's death?
I was caught. Not really, and I'll tell you why. Because since I've been here, there have been a number of demonstrations. And one of the things that's happened during these demonstrations is that the planned demonstrations are always very peaceful. But little by little, as the night progresses, a different element comes in with a totally different agenda, and that's where you have conflict. I think I was surprised by the fact that a person who had just been warned to get out of the roadway ended up back in the roadway when we went to check another location.
It's ironic, isn't it? Because that's what triggered the whole Michael Brown situation.
Yeah, that it, you know, I hadn't thought about that irony, but yes, that is a case. And you know, that situation was pretty sad in that the person who hit him didn't realize he was standing there. He had on dark clothing. And she attempted to stop. Then she was frightened away because of people surrounding her car. And then when she tried to pull off, you know, she was even more frightened because several people opened fire on her car and it was hit by several different weapons. She went to a safe location and then called police because she wanted to do the responsible thing.
What about the shooters?
Shooters are still, we're still in the process of trying to identify who those shooters are. And that's why we've requested anyone who had videotape or live, they were live streaming out there. If you have that, we're asking that you bring it to us because these people have no place at a protest. They didn't care about the safety of the people out there because they started shooting indiscriminately. Not only did they hit the car that they were shooting at, but they also hit another car that just was there by mere happenstance. And people were running all over the place. It was sheer pandemonium, and anybody could have been hurt.
There are so many guns on the streets of America today.
Yes.
Yeah. You know, having phrased that comment that way, let me just ask you about the way people in this country are viewing police today. It's a tough, tough job. What are your thoughts about that? We see the national political dialogue talking about America being a crime scene and you know, cops running amok and that sort of thing.
Well, I sort of reject the notion that cops are running amok. I think there are some serious issues that need to be addressed. I think that some people that put on the badge shouldn't put it on. But when you start to look at it from a more numerical sense, if you will, there are 18,000 police departments in the United States. The city of New York alone has 35,000 police officers, and so you're talking about thousands upon thousands of encounters every day. And we've highlighted just a few. Now, am I naive to think that there are no problems out there? By no means. I mean, I became a police officer because I was mistreated by a police officer. But by the same token, I think that we are so focused on it that I think that at some point we get a little bit, I think we sort of overblow some of the situation, but then there are challenges.
Yeah. Tell me about that incident you just mentioned that you were involved in.
Well, I had two incidents. I was a 15-year-old kid. I used to work after school. After band practice, and one night I was sitting on the bus stop waiting for my bus to come so that I could go actually to my job. A policeman comes up. He asked me what I was doing downtown. I said I was waiting for the bus. He said, well, you N-word, you shouldn't be downtown after dark when I'm working. And then he started to search my bags and said a few other things to me, and then he got in his car and he left. Had another incident a few years after that where I was walking home again from work. And when a police officer got out of his car, he pushed me up against a wall and searched me. Never said anything to me in this second instance, but he did nothing to restore my dignity. He didn't stop to explain to me why he had embarrassed me, why he put me in a situation where I was now afraid to walk home. And you know, those two things were pivotal to me deciding to become a police officer because I decided that I needed to provide better services to my community than I was getting.
You really could have gone any one of a couple of different ways following incidents like that.
I think so. But, you know, I have a grandmother who's always said that you can't clean a house unless you're in it. And so I think at that moment, it became my responsibility to become a better police officer than I had encountered.
You know, the story you've just told us is almost a typical story. You talk to young black men today, and you're going to hear the same kind of story. Ferguson certainly brought many of those stories to light from all over the country. What can you do as chief in Ferguson to assure that none of your officers acts as those officers did to you?
Well, you know, the police chief's job is to set the tone for the police department. His job is to lead. His job is to make sure that his supervisors are also held accountable for making sure that the police officers do as they're supposed to do. His job is also to rid the department of those officers who will not comply, who will not do the job as it should be done. And so that is the job of the police chief. But with that being said, things happen at 3 o'clock in the morning, at 4 o'clock in the morning when I'm not out there. And those are the things that keep me awake because you hope that you get a good quality of police officer. You hope that the message is there, that they do the job right. But you can't watch everyone at all times.
What is the status of the department right now? It is in some realignment, I gather, since you've come here. Where are we in all of that?
Well, we're pretty fresh in the process. We've signed a consent decree with the Department of Justice. There are certain mandates that have to take place with regard to training, with regard to hiring, with regard to diversification of the police department. There are also a number of things that have to be put in place with regard to community engagement activities. And so we're working very well to put those things together. We just recently agreed upon a monitor, an independent monitor, to act as a liaison between the Justice Department and the Police Department. And we are moving forward with the process. There are a number of things that have already taken place with regard to wide-ranging court reform, with regard to how fines are levied and collected, even with regard to statistical data being kept to make sure that there is no disparate treatment in those traffic stops.
What's morale like?
Morale is difficult. There are a number of police officers who are on the department, but we're down from 55 at our height to 36 police officers right now. And so there is a need to hire police officers, and we're looking for quality officers. We're not just looking to hire anyone, but we're looking for quality officers. And our guys have been working, the guys who stayed on have been working hard and working long, but the guys who stayed on have also stayed because they want to see those changes happen.
And a number have left?
A number have left. Some have gone to other departments. Some have left law enforcement altogether. You know, those are personal choices, but the ones who've stayed are the ones who are committed to bettering the lot of the community.
The size of the force will be at about 55. Is that correct?
55 is the number that we're moving to get back to.
What about diversity in the department?
The department was not very diverse prior to the civil unrest. I think at the time they had 3 African Americans and 2 female police officers on the department. Right now those numbers are up. We've got 3 female police officers and we've got 7 African Americans. And in this batch of officers that I'm looking to recruit a diverse pool of policemen, staying with quality, making sure that, you know, we don't cut any corners, but we want to make sure we diversify, because you can't tell me in a community that's 67% African-American, you don't have qualified African-Americans. Mm. There are 2 reasons why that would be the case. One, there was a problem with hiring in the first place, or 2, there was something about the department that didn't attract applicants because they didn't want to be a part of it.
Well, and you attract them now. How?
Well, there are a number of ways. I mean, one of the things that we're doing is we're out engaging the community, and the challenge is there because a lot of people want to see change. And my challenge to them is that if you want to see change, be a part of that change. And so we're hoping to recruit from those avenues, but we're also out engaging college students. We're out engaging kids who are at the academy but not attached. We're out actually actively trying to bring on good qualified applicants.
Do you think this is a I don't want to say an easy task, because I know it's not, but again, going back to the time that we're living in, you know, there's a whole law and order thing going on, and again, as I mentioned earlier, police officers are not held in the highest regard at this time. Does that make your job harder to recruit?
That makes the job harder because police officers are not held in high regard. And, you know, we've also changed it with regard to time. I mean, when I was a kid, kids wanted to be president of the United States. They wanted to be a police officer, a fireman, or an astronaut. Mm-hmm. Those professions aren't looked upon as jobs that people seek as much anymore, so that makes it harder. But the other challenge here is that in St. Louis County, we've got 90-some-odd municipalities, 60-some-odd police departments all competing for the same pool of applicants. Mm-hmm. And so that's another one of the challenges. So the challenges are tough, but I don't think they're insurmountable.
Yeah. I have to take a break now. We're talking with Chief Delrish Moss, who is the relatively new chief in Ferguson, Missouri. He was sworn in May. We'll come back and continue this conversation in just a moment, so stay with us. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU. Hello again and welcome back as we continue our conversation with Delrish Moss, who is the new police chief in Ferguson, Missouri, and kind enough to spend a little time with us here today. Chief Moss, you know, mentioned the difficulty in recruiting a moment ago. One of the things we hear in our business is that a lot of potential recruits for small-town police departments are not basically a very high quality. If they were high quality potential, they would be with a big city police department where they could make more money, have more benefits. Any credence to that?
Well, I think that staying competitive is something that Ferguson is working to try and do. Of course, we've had to close with a balanced budget and do some of those things. But, you know, there's a different style of policing. There's a different attraction from big city policing to small town policing or a more community diverse policing. So I think they both have their lures. With that said, though, it is a challenge because you, with a smaller police department, there is so much more of a potential for something to go wrong. And so you have to look at those applicants even more carefully because they can't get lost in the numbers. They can't get lost in that shuffle. And so it is difficult, but it's not impossible.
Have you had anything in the way of conversations with St. Louis County police officials? Because, of course, they were heavily involved in the problems after the Brown shooting.
Well, I've had lots of conversations with Chief Belmer, who I think is a first-class guy. We've worked together with regard to civil unrest and his department helping us with resources. We've worked together with regard to just sitting down and coming up with ideas. And I think that he is an innovative thinker as well. I think he is looking toward a great future in policing and how we can move forward. With that said, I do realize that there was a lot of criticism with regard to the unrest. There was a lot of criticism with regard to the militarization of policing. And I actually find that kind of ironic in that in the Orlando shooting, it was an up-armored vehicle that was able to go and take those doors mm-hmm. down. And so, you know, that debate is one that I think needs to be rounded out a whole lot more because when there are situations that require certain heavy equipment, and there are situations that don't. I think the balance is making sure that you have the equipment that you need, but you bring it out when it needs to be brought out.
This might be an unfair question. How might you have handled things differently, do you think, had you been police chief then?
You know, I don't think I want to go back and litigate what's happened in the past. I think I'm more forward-looking. I think that Ferguson was probably put in a situation that it had never been in, and there were a lot of challenges there. I think that we've also learned from a lot of those things, and we've learned a way forward. But I won't be unfair and say that they handled things totally wrong because I wasn't there. I wasn't on the ground to see, and I don't think it'd be fair for me to.
What changes have you made in the short time that you've been here, and what changes, significant changes, need yet to be changed?
Well, I think one of the first changes is it seems like the most simple, and that is that we've required police officers to actually get out of their car and actually engage citizens when there is not a call, when there is not a situation for them to be there, because I think in those positive engagements, you actually start to build relationships that are critical when things do eventually go wrong. That's one of the things. Another thing that we did, we just actually started with, we've increased the number of school resource officers because young people have so many ideas. They have so many thoughts about the direction of policing and how they want to be engaged. I think we need to hear those voices. But another thing that we've done is we've actually been out introducing ourselves to people, making sure that we get a feel for those community policing priorities that the community will actually provide to us. You know, I've always said that we police at the pleasure of the community, not at the peril or we don't lord over police, over the community. We police at the pleasure of the community. And so we've been listening to the community a lot with regard to meetings, with regard to introductions, all sorts of things.
Would you call that community policing?
I think that is. I think that community policing is actually developing relationships with the community and having the community set its priorities for you.
So that is already underway.
That is already underway.
What other changes do you see ahead that will make it a better department and a better community?
Well, we're also looking at organizational change. We're going to do some structural change at the department to actually change how we provide services. But those things are a little bit down the road because, of course, the first thing we've got to get is the manpower to be able to do some of these things. But I think that, you know, you will start to see some noticeable difference even in the relationship that police officers have. You know, one of the things that an old police chief of mine, an idea he gave me, seems like such a simple idea, but he required policemen to carry something as simple as a ball or a frisbee or a basketball or something in his car. And when you were down between calls and you saw kids out playing, get out and play with them. Yeah. Get out and throw your ball. You know, providing that one positive contact a day, and that's a challenge to all my police officers, one positive contact a day, it does wonders not only for the soul of the people that you're dealing with, but it also does something to you as a policeman, because I think one of the things that happens in this job is you go from bad situation to bad situation, and that becomes toxic.
You know, you just remind me of something I saw recently about police officers being encouraged by their superiors. When you see kids shooting baskets, get out of your car and shoot a few baskets with them. You can go a long way toward, bettering relations by doing that sort of thing.
Certainly. As a matter of fact, when I was in Miami, I ran the police athletic league. And, I'll never forget when I was working undercover some years ago. We were running through an alley after this guy, and he disappears in the alleyway. And when we came out, we met a hostile crowd. But one kid stepped out and said, "Hey, coach," to one of the police officers. And that changed the dynamic of the encounter. And people were able to take us to the guy, tell him to come with us, and the incident went off without a hitch.
Is this the kind of strategy then that you would hope would point to outsiders who come into your community who may be intent on trouble? I mean, it does happen. It has happened. It's happened in Ferguson.
Outsiders come in, but they come in. I think a lot of outsiders came in because there was a hurt in Ferguson, and so they were welcomed inside. And some of their ideas were welcomed. Well, we've heeded some of those calls. We're listening to our people. And, you know, when your community is behind you, no one can come in and cause problems. No one can come in and change the dynamic of a relationship that's been built over time. And I think that's what's critical for us moving forward.
How about money? Budget is an issue everywhere, certainly in Ferguson. I know a little relief recently with the recent election.
Well, we've had we've asked for two tax increases. Mm-hmm. Both were overwhelmingly passed, 65% by the voting population of Ferguson. Everything that we've asked the community for, they've given us with regard to tax increases, with regard to demands for service, all these things. And so that tells you that it is a community that wants to move forward and that's looking to move forward. And I think that is critical. Working hand in hand with the community is the only way forward.
Yeah. What is the your department's and your use of force policy? And I'm asking that because I'm wondering if a Michael Brown situation could happen again.
Well, you know, I don't know the circumstances of the Michael Brown situation. There have been lots of talks about it. There have been, there's myth and then there's fact. There's the Justice Department report. There's a number of things. But our policy is based on two things, what's reasonable and necessary. That force that is reasonable and necessary. And one of the things that is critical in Ferguson is the fact that we're also working very hard to institute de-escalation training, because anyone can go from 0 to 50, but when the situation backs down to 49 or to 48, police officers have to be prepared to do that also. And so that force that is reasonable and necessary are critical to how we look at things, and that's why de-escalation training is so critical.
Yeah, we have a couple of questions sent to us by listeners. One relates to training. Has new training for police officers begun? Yes, the answer to that is. And what does the training include? I think we're pretty much covered on that. Is there something we need to add to that?
Well, de-escalation training is huge. Also, training in community policing, training in verbal judo, these things that help to calm situations down rather than build them up.
Yeah. Another question here is, should my black children fear white Ferguson police officers?
My answer is no, they should not. Now, I understand that question because, you know, when I take this uniform off, I'm still a black man. And so I understand the need or the perceived need for the talk, which black families all across the country have. You know, police officers have those conversations with their sons. What I will tell you is that we have a department now. The people who stayed on this department are people who are very, very, very fair-minded and really wanting to work with the community, and that be black, white, or whatever. So my answer in the short is that your black children should not be afraid of the white police officers in Ferguson.
What's your relationship in these early stages with the politicians in Ferguson?
Well, I work for the city manager. Mm-hmm. He works for the politicians. I've always thought that policing and politics don't mix very well. I take my direction from the manager. He takes his direction from the politicians, and I think I leave it at that.
In terms of what you see as your biggest challenge going forward, we talked about some of your priorities, but what is the biggest potential obstacle to moving forward?
You know, I think the biggest obstacle right now is actually getting the numbers up to where they need to be. And one of those reasons is there's so
the
many training.
The size of the department.
The size
mean?
Of the yeah. department. Mm-hmm. And one of the reasons behind that is there are so many training needs that have to be met that we're looking to meet. But you also have to weigh that with the need to patrol the streets of Ferguson. And so when we have the appropriate numbers, then we can start to move people around and do a lot more training. I mean, we're doing it now, but it is putting a critical strain on the police officers because they work 12-hour shifts. They work day in and day out. And you don't want police officers who are out on the street and are exhausted because in exhaustion, mistakes are made.
Sure. You come to this job most recently from Miami, as we've indicated, as the public information officer. Mm-hmm. How does that help you in this job, that experience?
Well, you know, one of the things is that I came from Miami not as the public information officer. I was in charge of the public information office in addition to several other offices, crimes against the elderly, community resource, HUD. I had a number of different things under my span of control, and public information office was one of those things. But I think that being able to communicate is critical to being a policeman. Mm-hmm. Being able to communicate with people is critical. And so my public information background, I think, has been hugely helpful in my success.
Obviously, you communicate very well. You're displaying that today. Is there any unfinished business with the Justice Department?
Well, you know, the consent decree is 5 years, and there are a number of things that need to be done. And there are deadlines for a number of things. There are your 90-day deadlines, your 120-day deadlines, your 180-day deadlines, and so forth. And so there is a great chunk of that still needs to be done, and we're working rapidly toward it. You know, a lot of it had to do with court reform. Those things have been taken care of. Ordinance reform, those things have been taken care of, and there are a number of things that have been taken care of with regard to even how we hire and recruit policemen.
Yeah, there are a couple of lawsuits that are pending at the present time, just recently announced this week. And that point, the lawsuits point to the fragmentation of St. Louis County. There are a number of communities not unlike Ferguson who have
right.
the similar kinds of problems. Address this fragmentation issue. Is that helpful at all to you? Does it have any relevance at all to what you do or to how things work in North St. Louis County?
I don't think so. One of the things that happens is, you know, police officers know jurisdictional boundaries. Police departments know jurisdictional boundaries. Cities know jurisdictional boundaries. But ultimately, the people that we're dealing with don't. And so our challenge is, no matter what police department it is, whether it be Ferguson, whether it be St. Louis County, whether it be Calverton Park, whatever, the challenge is to provide the best service that you can. Whether you have multiple cities or you have one city, you're going to still need about the same amount of police officers to cover what needs to be covered, and Missouri law doesn't change.
Would one single countywide police department be helpful?
I don't know if that would be helpful. You know, that is something for the voters to decide. But, you know, one of the reasons communities have their own police departments is because there's some ordinances and some things that they think are priorities that they actually want to see addressed. And so really that's a community policing challenge.
People want their government and their police close to them.
They do.
Right. I want to thank you so much, Delbert Moss, for being with us. How long is your contract for?
Well, I don't have a contract. The manager can fire me tomorrow if he likes. But my commitment is to stay here as long as I can and do the best job that I can.
Well, thank you so much for being with us. Everybody's pulling for you, and everybody's pulling for Ferguson. I think we all love Ferguson, as the saying goes.
As the saying goes.
Thank you so much, sir, for being with us.
Thank you.
This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.